gente, welcome to another episode of El ADN Podcast, where every week we sit down with the movers and shakers of our culture for an honest and intimate conversation about their career journey, including all the challenges and failures they've overcome to reach their current success. I'm your host, Victoria Leandra. Stigma and shame have dominated the conversation surrounding menstruation since your very first period. But Nadia Okamoto is working to change that. The 24-year-old co-founded August, a startup reimagining periods, selling biodegradable, ethical, and tax-free period products. While studying full-time at Harvard, Nadia published her first book, worked as an executive director of her very own nonprofit organization, Period, and served as a board member for a Gen Z consulting agency. Nadia's work has clearly resonated on social media, with a following of over 2 million people on TikTok alone. So we talked to her about finding the right people to open a business with, how to build an online community that supports you offline, and dealing with rejection. Nadia, I am so excited to have you on El ADN Podcast. I found you through your work on Period. When I was a producer at Vice, I was researching a story for the newscast, and now I have you on the podcast. So full circle moment. I'm excited.
Me too. Thanks so much for having me.
You've made a name for yourself for being someone, I would like to say, someone who's a period advocate, a period activist. Why do periods matter so much to you?
First and foremost, like, I have a period, and I think getting a period for me is, it's like a time of the month where I have to be a lot more connected to my body, and it's always been that way, right? I think that as someone who's struggled with like dissociation and, you know, not always being in tune with what my body needs, like, when I get my period, it's just a time when I'm like hyper in tune with like my cravings, what my body's feeling, like when I need to change my tampon. And so I think for that reason, I mean, as you said, it's normalized in our bodies. We're always thinking about it more on our own. But I think that for me, I really started thinking about periods from like a work sense when I was 16 and learned about period poverty, and just hearing the stories of what people had to do when they didn't have access to period products. Living in a country like the US, where we should assume that basic necessities like these are covered, or at least we would hope, and hearing all about all the different ways that period products aren't accessible was something that I think made me really angry and made me initially super interested in getting involved in the advocacy side of ending period poverty.
I know that currently you're building the company that you wish existed when you were 12, when you first got your period. August, tell me a little bit about becoming a founder at such a young age. And it's weird for me to say at such a young age. My personal belief is that age is a construct too. Like, it doesn't matter how old we are to be building these things, but as some people may see us as young. So tell me a little bit about becoming an entrepreneur in your teenage years, basically.
I think social media has also really democratized the ability to like start and try anything. Like, I grew up with so many other friends who started organizations or initiatives when they're in high school. And I think that for me, like, similarly, I think I did a lot of my learning outside of the classroom. Like, even when I was at Harvard, like, I was constantly, you know, traveling for work and learning so much outside of the classroom. And so I think that I've never thought of it like, oh, I'm going to start my career at a really young age. It was like, oh, this is my time for dedicated learning. And I'm just happening to learn a lot more through the work that I'm doing outside of school than inside the classroom. It comes with challenges. I didn't get a typical college experience of like going out on weekends and like being on campus. By my second year, I was traveling every week. I think similarly, the first thing to go is like definitely like my social life. And I think in many ways it's good because I'm a lot more introverted than people think I am, but it is something that I think I'm constantly having to work on, which is, you know, as other people have really understood like what their sense of self is and what their, you know, social life outside of work looks like. For me, I think as I was figuring out who I was working constantly. Mm-hmm. I think for me, I'm still trying to understand who I am outside of work. And that's been kind of my big focus over the last couple of years on a personal level.
One thing that we often don't talk about especially when it comes to women in business, is money. Is there a sort of like a financial foundation that you've created for yourself to be financially savvy or financially well off?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, you know, I've been financially dependent since my early teen years. And so for me, like, I definitely think that I was always just really focused on having my basic living expenses covered and then just saving. Like, I think that's something I'm working on in therapy right now, is like learning how to actually like treat myself sometimes, because I've just always been really focused on saving as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something I'm going to try to work on.
Yeah. But it's also coming from a POC perspective, right? I think Latinos, Asians are kind of the same in that realm. Like, you are taught to save. We have to unlearn a little bit of that. And it's okay. One of the things that I love about your journey is that you've always shared period blood videos on social media. And that's as a way to sort of break with the period stigma that exists. I think before you, I had never seen other women's periods, because it's something that's so personal and so intimate. For some people, it's gross when it's like super normal. So tell me a little bit more about how you decided to start sharing these videos.
So I haven't actually always shared period blood. Like, again, I started my career at 16, and it wasn't until last year that I started sharing my period blood online. And I think a lot of that is, you know, even when I was working on a nonprofit, like, I was always trying to be this like societally constructed idea of like what a professional was. I think being a young person in business or organizing, it's like, oh, people aren't going to take me seriously because of my age, so I need to be put together. I need to like show up with more like maturity and like not make them too uncomfortable. And I think that for me, like, when I started my own company, it was like, suddenly I felt like, even, you know, even though I have investors, a lot of the investors understood what my mission was. And I felt so strongly that the only way we were going to really live out our values of being bold and challenging the stigma was to like be unafraid of talking about periods and even showing periods. And so I think that for me, like, it actually took 5 years of doing this work and even like trying to dismantle the period shame I had ingrained into me to get to a point where like I felt comfortable sharing my period blood, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that honestly, like, it feels so natural today because we haven't been showing it. So people are so confused about like what color their period blood should be, like how much period blood should be. And so I think that for me, like, again, it's been like a lot of learning on my end. And I think it's been a journey to get to a point where like even I feel comfortable showing that. But now I very much am.
One of the things that have resulted out of sharing these videos online is more than 2 million followers on TikTok. Clearly people are resonating with you. Clearly people want to see more of your content. Can you tell me a little bit about what works in the platform and what's sort of been your strategy to growing that audience?
I started really posting on TikTok maybe like 6 months ago, and I did not expect it to like become what it is now, but it's been really exciting to see it grow. I didn't really have a strategy. I just started posting a lot. Like, whatever questions people had, I answer. And I also stopped caring about like making content to go viral necessarily. Like, as you can probably see, like, I make videos that get like a few hundred likes. And I think that for me, I just started like showing up kind of like excited to answer questions. And every once in a while, like maybe once a day or something, like one will go viral, which is exciting.
I think it's super important for business owners like yourself to have an identity on social, because a lot of the times that's how people are finding your product. That's how I find restaurants. I always check what the food looks like, for example. So tell me a little bit about how you use the different platforms. Like, for example, I've seen that your Twitter content is different than your Instagram versus your TikTok. Is there a strategy there, or what's the mindset?
I think for me, like, I've been a lot less active on Instagram. I don't really use Twitter because I don't like Twitter. On TikTok, I post a lot more there just because it's a lot more fun. I like video content. Like, even for me, like, I I never spend time scrolling through Twitter. Like, it's just not a platform that I necessarily enjoy. I think for me, like, the way I experience the platforms, I end up falling into kind of a strategy, in the sense that, like, on Instagram, it is a platform where you have to be mindful of how many times you're posting and, like, how polished it is and how it's going to show up in the algorithm and how it's going to affect your engagement rate. Versus on TikTok, I just don't really care about any of those rules. And so I end up, like, spam posting and just, like, you know, talking shit. And, like, I think that for me, like, I just end up spending a lot more time there. And I think, to your point around, like, do you niche down? Like, inherently, I think if you are a unique person and have unique views, that is a niche.
You've been a founder of a nonprofit organization, period. You've been a book author. You are also a board member of a consulting firm. Tell me a little bit about how you make time for it all.
Well, I think that for me, like, Google Calendar definitely saves my life. Like, I Google Calendar everything in terms of, like, what all my meetings are and things like that. Like, my rule of thumb is I have to sleep 8 hours a night.
The company that you're currently working on, you co-founded. So tell me a little bit more about finding a co-founder. I know that it's not necessarily easy to find someone that you sort of, like, vibe with, someone that has your same vision and who believes in your mission. So how did you find this person, and how do you recommend others do?
My co-founder was always either a really good friend or someone that I knew who I really respected and admired for specifically their operational skills. Because, you know, I think as a person, I'm not operationally minded. I think, like, very big picture. And I think that while that's a good thing sometimes, that isn't realistic when you're trying to, like, actively build a company or an organization. You need that other part that's going to think about the operational executional plan. So for me, I think a lot of finding a co-founder was like, oh, here's a best friend in my life or a person I know who I just have, like, the utmost respect for and I'm so inspired by and how operationally minded they are. And I think also having the experience of knowing them, you know, my co-founder of my first organization was, like, a classmate of mine, and, like, seeing them lead in the classroom and, like, really respecting them in that way, it just made sense that to bring them on as a co-founder. And then, you know, separately, when I first started thinking about what is now August, like, I was venting to my friend about it, and he was formerly a COO at the last company we worked on. And so I think that it was just, like, a natural thing that when we started talking about it, it made a lot more sense talking about it together, right? So it was never, like, I've never really had to go on this journey of, like, oh, I'm going to go find a co-founder and I'm going to go interview people. Like, that was never it. It was very, always, like, very natural, very, like, oh, like, the person that I'm starting to, like, end up talking about and enjoy talking about it with, who, you know, because we have productive conversations because we're bringing things different to the table, naturally, they should be my co-founder.
I know that part of your journey currently at August is fundraising. So can you tell me a little bit more about crafting sort of the company in a way that people are interested in investing their money in? You have to have a very clear picture of who you are and who you want to be in order for people to basically believe in you and give you money. So how did you get to the point that you're in now?
Well, I hate fundraising. and I think that for me, like, a lot of it is because it's just a lot of rejection, right? I think fundraising, especially in the beginning stages, is a lot of, like, people being like, oh, I just don't know if that can happen, if you're the right person to make that happen. I'm not interested in the category. And I think that for me, like, a lot of my kind of focus on fundraising was, like, really trying to sell and explain the need for a brand like August. And a lot of that meant, like, explaining, okay, even though I'm still in school, you know, when I started fundraising, this is why I'm the right person to do it. This is my experience. And having, like, the utmost confidence, at least in those conversations about it. And I think similarly, it was a lot of, you know, talking about, like, okay, this is where the industry is right now and, like, why the industry needs disruption. Here are the case studies and examples of how the industry has, like, people have tried to disrupt the category, and explaining why it hadn't worked, and why we're well positioned to be the disruptors, right? So I think that a lot of it was going in with, like, very strong confidence, because if someone is interested in investing, that's when they're going to start asking you all the hard questions and pushing back on you, which can feel really awful. But I think that for me, it was learning, like, when they're pushing me on those questions, it often is a sign that they're interested. And I think if I can show up knowing my shit, having confidence, and like not being afraid to, like, you know, speak from my heart on like what I believe this company can be, then it can work out.
Mm-hmm. I love that you talked about rejection, because one of the things that we like to focus on El ADN podcast is failure. Oftentimes, like when we talk to highly achieving women, we focus on the highlights, of course, like we focus on the success, but we never ask about what are the challenges that they've had to go through and push through to get to where they are today. So can you share with us a moment in which you almost quit, or a moment in which you maybe didn't believe in what you were doing because someone else didn't believe in it, and how you sort of picked yourself back up in order to continue doing the work?
I always have been dealing with rejection my whole life. Like, you know, I think that we experience it on the playground. We experience it, you know, I don't know. It's just like something we're always experiencing. I really try to contextualize, like, they're not rejecting me. They're rejecting like my idea. And I care so much about the idea that like, I don't really give a fuck about what they think.
One thing that I always keep with me, it's that I am not my thoughts. My thoughts just pass through my mind, but I am not the thoughts. And that's something that really resonates with me, especially when it comes to like imposter syndrome, for example. Sometimes you see all the things that you've accomplished and then you don't feel as accomplished. And it's like, whatever, this is just like one thought, let it go, and then continue on with your life. Can you share with us perhaps the best piece of advice that someone has given you for your entrepreneurial journey?
A big thing about my entrepreneurial journey has been like really burning out and learning the hard way to take care of yourself. And I think that that's something that I am going to continue and having to work on over the next many years of being in this journey too.
That's sort of like a part that we often do not focus on, but it's like, you cannot do the work for others if you don't do it for yourself. Beyond your work, how do you want to be remembered?
I just want to be remembered as like a genuine person. I think that like in the world of social media, and like now like having so much of my career being like an influencer or whatever, I just hope that people remember me as like a genuine person.
For the young woman that see you and aspire to do something important with their career as you have done, what is a piece of advice that you would share with them?
I would say just like, one, go for it. Like the worst that can happen is that it doesn't happen and you just continue doing school. I think young people who, especially who are in school, are uniquely positioned because like you don't have kids or high responsibilities or like a full career that you have at stake. It's like you're at the very beginning. Worst case scenario, you stay in school. And I think that for me, like that is freedom to like really create and go for things. And then I would also say just like, especially now in social media world, like making sure that like outside of the digital space, you have a life that you really love.
Right? What is something that you wish someone had told you before you started this whole journey?
I think honestly, I wish someone had told me to sleep more. Like I honestly, like if there's anything I could like tell my younger self, it would be just to sleep more. Like I just went years without sleeping enough and it affected my health, my relationships, like my happiness, like how much I actually like consciously remembered what I was working on. And that's something that I think I will always hope.
Here are my top takeaways from our conversation. Number one, they're not rejecting you. They're only rejecting one of your many ideas. So be perseverant. Number two, surround yourself with people on your same path. The conversation is different. Number three, don't be so busy building your career that you forget to build your life. Sleep a lot, live a little. You're doing better than you think. Trust me. Thank you so much for listening. Gracias, mi gente. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and leave us a review. That's so helpful and exciting to us. If you learned something from this episode, share it with a friend. I'm sure they'll enjoy it as well. We drop new episodes every single Monday morning, but you can always find us on Instagram at El ADN Podcast. And before you leave, we want to hear your takeaways from today's guest. share with us via Instagram stories, and don't forget to tag El ADN Podcast and Victoria Leandra for a regram. El ADN Podcast is executive produced and owned by your host, Victoria Leandra, and edited by Jasmine Plata.